First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
LouisvillePolitics.com and EdSpringsteen.com. Make sure you check out the websites and join our email newsletter, where once a week we send everything direct to your inbox. And for those of you who are regular listeners to the show and can't make it all the time live, that's okay. Go on the RSS feed and we'll make sure that gets sent to your email inbox as well. As always, phone number for the show, 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334. And for you guys that are listening to you, make sure you hit that number one on your dial pad so that we will know that you want to get on air, and we'll get you on as soon as we can. And for everybody else, if you just want to sit there and listen to the show and rap in the chat room, you can do that as well. You can join the live chat by signing in using Facebook or Twitter or any other social media thing that you have available. In the meantime, it's the start of a brand new week, brand new scandals, and I tell you what, I just love Louisville, Kentucky, and some of these clowns we call elected officials. How are you, Mr. Martin?
Doing all right, Mr. Springsteen. Still at work, so if you hear any, you hear me scream, I'm getting out of the way of a forklift or something. So.
Okay, so don't call 911 if I hear you scream. You got employees for that, right?
Well, yeah. If somebody's driving a forklift and hits me, I'm hoping that they'll get off and, dial 911. Throw some sawdust on the blood on the floor, something like that.
Yeah, clean up the mess anyway, for goodness sake. I hear you, buddy. I hear you. Hey, listen, I tell you what, we are going to start tonight, and I want to give some major, mad, loud props to one of my great friends over at WFPL, Philip Bailey.
Oh, I know where you're going already.
You know exactly. I tell you, it is phenomenal. It is hilarious. It is what I call justice. Dan Johnson, Democratic Councilman Dan Johnson, has decided to go out and lie about his legislative aide. He just hired Jefferson County Judge Executive Brian Matthews as his new legislative aide after firing his previous legislative aide that he gave a 12% raise to, or a 9% raise to, one of the two, on March 28th. Dan Johnson, Democrat councilman, and Brian Matthews just got caught. You talk about you talk about taking care of your buddy. I mean, Matthews has been living with Dan Johnson for a long time, even when Dan and his wife were separated. You know, these guys are closer than two peas in a pod. Make up your own mind why. Nobody else can figure it out. However, he decided he was going to make Matthews his legislative aide, terminated the person that he just gave a raise to two months ago, Brianna Morgan, and he hired him at more money at $50,000 a year. But what's really fascinating here is he lied to his constituents. He lied to anybody and everybody, saying that Brian Matthews was an attorney with a law degree and that Brian Matthews was the most qualified for this office, and it was a bargain hiring him at $5,000 more a year than Matthews' predecessor in Brianna Morgan. And to top it all off, Ed, and this is the next phase of this. I'm going to give you plenty of time to talk, but I want to make sure we put the big picture out there for our audience. And to top all of this off, Dan Johnson is the one who's tried to make a case about David James and this dual oath garbage, if you remember. He was out there saying that David James, because he had an oath of office to the University of Louisville private police department, that somehow his oath of office to the Metro Council was in conflict. He did that on behalf of Jim King and Michael Connell and those guys. There's a concerted effort by this old guard to get rid of David James because they feel David James is a threat because he doesn't play ball and do what they want him to do. He's not a puppet on a string. What does this do as well, since Brian Matthews is the elected, I don't care about the responsibilities of the office, but he has been elected by the people of the people and for the people to be the county judge executive, regardless of any authority he may have. And he had to take an oath of office there. And now, as a legislative aide, you know, is he not in the same situation that Johnson is going after James for? That's the background, folks. Ed, your opinion.
Well, you know, first off, I find it hard to believe, although it's some schadenfreude, but I find it hard to believe that we, you know, he hires a man after effectively, you know, he squeezed Brianna's hours down to the point she couldn't make a living doing it, which she was doing before. I guess she was competent up to that point because, you know, lacking Brian Matthews coming on board, everything was hunky-dory, I guess, and then all of a sudden a man comes in, and the man, you know, hashtag war on women, the man comes in and is making, you know, at least 10% more than she is, 12% more than she was, on the first day he starts the job. And, you know, for what it's worth, is Dan lying or is Dan stupid? I don't know. Maybe a little of both. You know, he's out there saying it was maybe a lot of votes. Who knows? But he's out there saying, you know, he had a law degree. And even Brian, you know, to Brian's credit on that, he says, no. He didn't even try to bluff. He's like, no, I never told him that. I never went to law school. So, you know, boom. And Dan, initially when Dan was questioned on that, I think it was Philip Bailey he retorted to and said, well, he's not in the registry of lawyers with, you know, the Kentucky Bar because he's not practicing. It's like, all of a sudden, it's like, oh, my God, you know, he'd never been to law school. I believe him. He never told you he was a lawyer. Who would do that? And then he turns around, and Dan tried to make a story up, and now he's just clammed up because, he's, you know, that's his way. Dan, get over it, Johnson.
But, well, we're getting to that, too.
But you know, but when you're talking about the oath and everything and the whole blow-up about David James and whatnot, and his separate oath, and of course, you know, one of the arguments coming out that would have defended Brian was that he didn't have any authority, and, you know, it's okay, you know, now it's a ceremonial post. But I think if people go back and look at what he may have put on Facebook, you know, all the activities he does, and he actually calls himself Judge Brian Matthews. And Ed, you're going to like this. But you interviewed for the, you know, I kind of just hung on like you and Brian Matthews. You interviewed him, and he was, I tell you what,
yes,
it was impressive. And he had no problem ticking off the authorities, you know, the things he had done involved with the Kentucky Association of County Judge Executives and things like that. So to say, you know, when it's convenient to say, oh, well, it's just a ceremony for this, and didn't have any salary, didn't have any authority, and then when I'm thinking back to the rather impressive interview you had with him, I'm like, okay, do you have authority or not? Because when you were interviewing him, he was pretty big on the position, you know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We interviewed Brian on air about a year and a half ago, and, you know, he was talking about all the things that his office does, that he's, you know, that he can do and all this other stuff and all this crap on behalf of Louisville. You know, we gave him fair time. We gave him fair play. We allowed him to say whatever he wanted to say. You know, we did the interview above board, and it's really interesting. But the fascinating thing is he goes on record to say that, you know, he never told Dan Johnson that he was a licensed lawyer or that he had ever attended law school or taken a bar exam. But Johnson put this out publicly on Facebook, and what he said was that his aide was paid $45,000 a year, and Brian is an attorney, and getting him for this position is cheap. Then he was called to task onto Facebook, and, of course, he starts deleting anybody. He deletes at will anybody that says anything about it or questions him in any way. He deletes off of Facebook. The problem for him is there's too many people like me and Philip Bailey out there who actually copy these Facebook posts and save them just in case we ever need them. And it's really fascinating. And more than that even is the fact that, you know, as you pointed out, you know, Brianna Morgan got a 12% pay raise, you know, back in March. On March 28th, less than 2 months ago, you know, what is that, 6 weeks now? Or yeah, it's been 2 months now, I guess. But, you know, she got a 12% pay raise on March 28th for being such a good worker, and because Brian Matthews is now unemployed, and we'll get to why in just a second, and he's a friend of Dan Johnson's, he told Brianna Morgan, you're going to get to work a couple of days a week part-time because I'm going to make room for Brian. You're out, or you can leave. So she left. I mean, she can't afford to feed her family on a couple of days a week. And you know, it's really because he wanted Brian Matthews, because Brian Matthews, again, like I said, they are great friends. Brian, there's a lot that's been discovered over the year and a half since we ever interviewed about Brian Matthews, folks. A lot I will put out there eventually. But it's interesting that instead of saying, hey, I made a mistake, I mean, what he's basically said is, okay, I didn't check his resume. I just hired him because he's a friend. There you go with the patronage. You know, I didn't care about his resume because that would have been a blatant. I mean, what he did was a blatant mischaracterization of Brian's resume, even based on the only statement we've gotten from Brian Matthews. It is a blatant mischaracterization of Brian's resume, and Dan Johnson either chose to hire him without having him vetted, which is very concerning. Metro Council members do that all the time, or he is just blatantly doesn't care if he lies. The Beachmont Neighborhood Association in his district is livid, for rightfully so. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, you know, yeah, I read where the Beachmont, they are. Dan is, just as, you know, friend of the show, Brian Simpson, he copied and pasted. By the way, you know, I guess Dan doesn't know what a screenshot is.
Yeah.
He screenshotted and copied and pasted his response when people were up in arms, you know, the Beachmont neighborhoods and stuff. Not the highest income neighborhoods going. About the LG and the 3% surcharge tax or what, you know, right away tax, whatever they want to call it. And Dan literally told people, you'll probably never notice it or something like that, get over it. And, you know, hey, Dan, if you're listening, it's called a screenshot, you know, pretty much everybody's got the little scissors picture down in the icon down the bottom of their It exists. You can't get away with it. You know, you can delete all the people you want, like me. You can unfriend me. So what? But, yeah, I think I just, wow, you know, to imagine that this guy's your council critter, to realize that he's been there long enough that when he hangs it up, and there are, you know, there, even ahead of this, there were, you know, much talk of him this being his last term. I basically have said on the line, it's like, well, sure, Dan's popping off. Dan's getting reckless. He doesn't give a crap because he's got his pension. You know, you don't have yours. Get over it. It's pretty much what we're getting out of it. He doesn't give a damn. He's got this sort of impunity. His pension's locked up, and he doesn't care.
Oh, it's really fascinating. And even worse, I mean, the people in Beachmont and everything else, I mean, Dan's district is a pretty diverse district. It really is. I mean, you've got green card holders, you've got illegal aliens. Just go to Americana Apartments and you'll see what I'm talking about. You have black, you have white. I mean, it really is a very diverse district. But when you look at this, you know, Brian Matthews was terminated. He was hired to be the director of the Kling Center early last year. Sometime early 2013 very late 2012, but he was only there for a few months. The reason he was fired from the Kling Center is because of a lot of different things. He wasn't doing his job, almost cost the Kling Center some serious grant money because he wasn't doing the paperwork correctly. But more importantly, it has come out that one of the reasons he was terminated was for using the N-word. Now, a lot of people that come into the Kling Center, you know, are African-American people. And Brian allegedly used the N-word. Councilman David James, of course, brought that up when he was interviewed about this situation. You know, he said he was surprised that Johnson hired him, even after that had allegedly taken place. But it's very, very interesting here because Robert Phillips, who was a board member at the Kling Center, had actually confronted Matthews. Matthews used the N-word in November when he was talking to staff about a visitor to the center that had come in and used their services. Matthews used it repeatedly during the conversation. Now, remember, this is alleged, folks. This is Robert Phillips, former board member. Matthews used it repeatedly during the conversation, even after he was asked to stop using it by Mr. Phillips, who had confronted him at the center. And Phillips told him, he said, "Brian, you're out of pocket using that word." And according to Phillips, his response was, "Everybody uses that word. You know, it wasn't a big deal." You know, those are the kind of things that are going on. Now we have an interesting dilemma because the Metro Council is now going to be in one hell of a tizzy with the Democratic caucus. And here's why. Jim King worked with Vicki Welch and Dan Johnson, bought them off to get rid of David James as the Democratic caucus chair. David James is the only African-American that was running, on that caucus. He was the chairman. So they got rid of him. Vicki Welch and Dan Johnson made some deals with Jim King. Most people know that. Those are what we call open secrets. And at the end of the day, in return for them making that happen, Vicki became the Democratic caucus chair and Dan became the vice chair. How in the world can Dan Johnson survive this? Because Vicki Welch, the chair, isn't saying anything negative about him. We're going to look into it, which is standard for, hell, we'll act like we're doing something and leave it alone. How can Dan Johnson even be remotely considered plausible for a vice chair of the Democratic caucus when there clearly is going to be a major problem when it comes to dealing with African Americans based on this situation? Go ahead.
Well, yeah, I agree. I agree with you. I mean, and in all fairness, I would say as far as use of, you know, racial slurs, that it, or even if it's not a slur, you know, as you've done before, sometimes people use it just as a word, maybe repeating it as a word somebody else said or something. I mean, you can't have the rap songs, you can't repeat without, you know, going there. But beyond that, it's alleged, but and Brian is denying it, you know, aggressively. But I see something like that, and I think, okay, you know, we have personnel. You've dealt with personnel departments. Everybody's dealt with human relations departments. If you're unjustly terminated and there's not a case against you, you should get an attorney. You know, it's like, look, if this is unsubstantiated, you got to deal with that right then, right there. You know, and if it is substantiated, you got to deal with it right then, right there. And for just, you know, say, okay, you said this, we're going to let you go, and then say, as he is now, I did not say that, I did not do that, after the fact, and you're going to take a termination on those terms, that just doesn't sound like something that anybody that thinks forward would do, especially being a Democrat, being liberal, and knowing how poisonous that is to much of the constituency. I personally can't for the life of me figure out why it wasn't challenged at the time, and
Well, I'll be honest with you. And once again, I got to make sure everybody understands. This is an exclusive story by WFPL. This is not an Ed Springsteen or an MVM story. We're following it closely. WFPL's political editor, Philip Bailey, is the one behind the story. So give credit where it's due. But I did send Philip Bailey a message last night. And, he wouldn't give me any details about anything, obviously, for obvious reasons. I am competition. But I am curious to see if Brianna Morgan does decide to sue, because I know Kentucky is an at-will state, but there still has to be something there. You can't just get rid of somebody to hire your friend and then give them more money, especially when you're working for the government. So, you know, I hope that she is, you know, at least thinking that. And if she listens to this show, you know, Brianna, I want to tell you, I will be more than happy to get you an attorney that will help you get satisfaction from this. I have great attorneys. They don't lose. And this is exactly what we try to help people with, is helping them, you know, be treated fairly by a system that's corrupt. And this is a corrupt system. It is fascinating, because when you look at all of this, Ed, I mean, you know, and then, of course, you got people like, I hate to even mention this guy's name, but Kurt Morrison, who had ran out of here on a silver platter, now resides in California because he got caught illegally taping a Mitch McConnell staff meeting. You know, now he's out there trying to attack Philip Bailey and a few others, but most people in this town know Bailey is legit. This isn't something Bailey would put out there if there wasn't anything to back it up. And then, of course, if you guys really want to laugh, go check out Bailey and Matthew's Twitter feeds from yesterday. It is hilarious, from all weekend, really. It is hilarious. Brian Matthews, I mean, one of the biggest crybaby things I've ever seen is Brian Matthews saying, "Why don't you like me? I like you." On Twitter, to Philip Bailey, because he's scared to death because he just got caught. And one other thing I want to point out, too, Ed, and then we'll continue the discussion. Our good friend Paul Holliger over at Stop Invisible Taxes just put a link in the chat room. Matthews is also a member of the Jewish Community Relations Council, and he co-chairs a legislative committee and is a member of the executive committee there as well. You know, and when I see that, you know, think of me what you will, call me what you want, folks. But when I see that, I can't help but go back to Jerry Abramson, former mayor. He would not run for a third term because I nailed his butt to the wall, and the African-American community got to see what Jerry Abramson really thought about the African-Americans in this community when he got caught on tape referring to Louisville as getting poorer, blacker, and older when he was speaking out of state at a conference. I can't help but think of that when I think about the possibility that Brian Matthews allegedly, you know, is using the N-word. And there's a hell of a tie right there through the Jewish Council. I've been trying to figure out where his backing comes from, and now we know, in my opinion anyway. I think that says a lot. And then we come to this, Ed. Today, Philip Bailey put out another story. Dan Johnson, you referred to this a little bit earlier, but let's get the backstory here. Dan Johnson is refusing to share the contents on Michael Connell, the county attorney's legal opinion on whether Matthews can even legally serve as Johnson's legislative aide. All right, Brian Matthews had a private attorney try to argue on his behalf, saying that he could serve both positions because a county judge executive position is essentially powerless. It may be essentially powerless for duties, but it's very powerful because it's a constitutional office that he got elected for. So Johnson forwarded that argument to Michael Connell to ask him to decide on it. And the county attorney's office, and this is another thing I have a dig against Michael Connell on, but the county attorney's office said that they have sent a response, but they would not give a copy to WFPL's Philip Bailey. According to the spokesman at Michael Connell's office, the document is protected by attorney-client privilege, so Johnson would have to be the one to share it, and Johnson refuses to tell anybody or share the document to back it up on what Michael Connell's office ruled. Comments?
Well, I mean, we've got two public servants submitting arguments to a third public servant, of which we all pay their salaries and their pensions, and they're telling you to shove it. None of your damn business. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know what more needs to be said about it. I mean, it's an opinion. It's a legal opinion. So, you know, what's it going to hurt? This is not like pictures of somebody in a compromising position. This is a legal opinion. This is a matter of mechanics. Nothing personal, guys. So, why
I disagree, and here's why. And here's why. All right? We know Jim King is behind the protection of Dan Johnson. We know this. Okay? Jim King has been working with O'Connell and Johnson and everything else to get rid of David James. Now, clearly, everybody is a little bit worried because, there's, you know, Dan Johnson will open his mouth after a couple of pills or a drink, whichever one he prefers that day. He will open his mouth to say just about anything. I don't care if you like the new fees. Get over it. You know, I'm going to hire a guy who uses the N-word allegedly. He's a great friend of mine that lives with me. He doesn't care about anything. He doesn't care. So here's where I'm going with this. Michael Connell's office had no problem whatsoever going out and immediately trying to make a case that David James didn't have the legal authority to be a councilman at the same time he is a privately paid police officer with the University of Louisville Police Department. And I fail to see where there is a difference where they can pick and choose what should be the internal argument. If they can put it out there and put the opinions and everything else out there against David James, you also had Commonwealth Attorney Tom Wine weigh in on that story publicly, and then deny us the same transparency and sunshine with Dan Johnson in a very similar situation, how do we justify that?
Well, we don't. That's what I'm saying. Is we had, so we don't disagree. I was just saying we've got a whole slew of public people, and they're telling us that it's none of our damn business, when in fact, you know, when it suits them, they have no problem making it our, you know, make somebody else's dirty laundry or somebody else's legal battles. They have no problem making it somebody else, you know, the public in general's business. So, I mean, just it's arrogance, it's stupidity. You know, take whichever you want. I just look at the whole thing, and you know, and Brian is a very active, politically active guy. I mean, that's in a lot of elections, he gets more votes. In the last, he got more votes than a lot of, you know, of paid candidate positions, people with actual, you know, actual offices. So he's out there, and I'm convinced the minute Dan hired him, you know, and let a woman go, hashtag war on women, and paid her more, gender discrimination. It kind of like the Chelsea Clinton thing. I think Dan was queuing him up. I think rumors abound that Dan is going to be like Dan's last term. He's ready for his pension, you know, sit around, make money, doing nothing. But I think he's ready for it. And this was, I think, his grand plan was he was going to queue Brian up to be the next council person. And if you're the L.A., you know, you're out there meeting everybody, organizing. It was basically going to be an ongoing campaign because, let's face it, the Courier just scorched Dan Johnson, you know, basically finally called him out as a doofus. And I think he was done. I think he was done. I think he was just simply being amateurish, being a bit dense. I think he just was trying. They were working on queuing Brian up for the council position going forward. It was ready made. He's gonna get paid well. He had his insurance paid. He was gonna be out there doing all those councilman things, so that when the next election rolled around, it was just gonna go right in. It was just gonna spill right in, right behind Dan.
Oh yeah, so, it was definitely that game. I agree.
I think they had half set plans. It was a singular purpose. So, you know, they were going to say what they had to say. They were convinced in their arrogance or stupidity that they were going to get away with it and screw you. And that's what it was. So now all this stuff comes out. I mean, Dan was so singularly focused on getting his friend in that, you know, who knows, maybe then Dan would have become the LA and double dipped, or maybe Dan would have, you know, he would have been Dan, as he likes to call himself, the man, to get things done, because he and Brian are tight. You know, he's the power broker now. So,
well, there's no doubt.
What a goofball on so many levels.
Well, I want to put this in. Then we're going to take a quick break and move on to some other stuff. But, you know, Kevin Steller, he's a board member of the Beachmont Neighborhood Association. He lives in Johnson's District. He was caller to WFPL, basically saying that, You know, he did hear that Councilman Johnson said he was getting Matthews at a bargain for $50,000, which we can prove by the Facebook post. But he says he's not sure where Councilman Johnson got the fact that he was a lawyer, because he's not. And then he goes on to say he is usually giving very short answers, and it's kind of like talking down to a child, almost like this is how it's going to be and you've got to live with it. That's what we've been getting from Dan Johnson. So that is exactly the character of Johnson. And I tell you, folks, I would really hope at this time, and I am actually looking into ethics violations and a few other things along the line with this. And once I get that completed, if there's a case there, folks, I will be pursuing charges, because that's what I do. But hopefully the people in his district will basically say none of the above come November. I hope he doesn't get one vote. He's the only one on the ballot. I mean, how does that work? But, you know, of course he will. But it's very interesting and very promising. I'm going to pay real close attention to this story. Philip Bailey has done an excellent job. So we're going to take a quick bottom-of-the-hour break. When we get back, we're going to get into a couple other things. Yes, you betcha. We're going to talk about Louisville Fire and Rescue and some budget things that are going on that you might find interesting. So stick around, and we'll be right back. Listen to the Ed Springson Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email MyViewMatters at AOL.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
Don't forget, as always, call-in numbers are 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334. And for you guys in the listening queue, we appreciate the heck out of you. You're always there and loyal. We thank you for that. Now make sure you hit that number one on your dial pad so we can get you on air as soon as possible if you want to be heard. Oh, man, I tell you, I spent a lot more time on that than I wanted to, but it was really, really funny to me. I just can't believe how stupid some people are. Going into
we talk out here, it's been a long time coming. I mean, Dan Johnson has been, he's been arrogant. He's been, and he does. He talks down to people, and he always uses, excuse me, sir. He's notorious for that. But, it's like we talk about. It's just amazing that it's taken him this long to goof up. It really is. It's just the way he talks to people, the way he conducts his business, and just now, he stepped in it. So, enjoy it, man. It's just getting started.
Well, and it appears that Matthews is Dan Johnson Jr. So, I mean, you know, peas in a pod, I guess. I don't know, but it's really funny. We go to kind of move on a little bit. The 2015 budget, you know, of course, Greg Fisher screaming and hollering, we had to have the LG&E surcharge fee for. And by the way, folks, this is going to be a lot different. Don't plan on us paying for that too long. But anyway, as part of the budget, Louisville Fire and Rescue is actually getting about $800,000 less this year, according to Chief Greg Frederick. And, you know, that's actually a good thing because, it's not that their budget has changed. They just saved $800,000 last year, so they get, you know, that's the way government works. You're on a budget. If you save that amount of money, that's that amount you're not going to get next time. That's why you see a lot of times in the federal government, and I can tell you that firsthand, working in the military, you know, you'll see everybody on a base spend every dime they have of their budget within the last 30 days so that all their money is spent by the end of September so that they don't get less money next year. But that's the way it works in government. Well, anyway, there are some highlights from that. For one thing, they're going to do with about $800,000 less. However, that's because the fire department has saved $423,000 from a decrease in the pension rate, a good thing, $446,000 in a reduction in unscheduled overtime because they were able to graduate some recruits. That was good. You know, and so you've got all of these different things going on. But here's one of the things that caught my eye. The fire department has 478 employees. Okay? There are 208 firefighters. Out of 478 employees, folks, 208 are firefighters. You've got 97 captains, 95 sergeants, and 20 majors. And there's about 115 personnel per shift. Now, when I look at this, to me, it's clearly obvious exactly what's wrong with government and some of these programs, including the fire department. Am I glad that they were able to save money last year? Certainly. But 208 firefighters out of 478? That means 40% of your people are the firefighters. And out of the remaining of those, you've got a full 25% that are captains. You've got 97 captains, 95 sergeants, 20 majors. When you add that up, that's about equal to 1 leader per firefighter. So it's a one-on-one ratio, chief to Indians. That's why I found that story interesting. Can we not do a better job in government? Do we have to have all of these people? If we only need 208 firefighters, why do we got to have 200 people in leadership positions so that there's one apiece for each firefighter? That is a concern to me, and that is something that nobody really thought about when this story was put together, that some little redneck like me was going to think about that. But it's the truth, and it's the same way in everything we've got when it comes to government. You got one boss for one or two employees. How does that go in your private sector business, Ed? Do you have that opportunity? Does your business run good?
Oh, I mean, we may have people that are classified as supervisory or management, but they're in the, you know, it's a lot of times it only comes in handy once or twice a month or once or twice a year because it's generally all hands on deck. So, you know, if our company was the fire department, yeah, you might walk around with a captain designation, but that doesn't mean you're not going to be asked to pick up a broom and clean up a mess just like everybody else or get on a forklift. So, but yeah, it just things like that, it just, you know, government contractors, they're notorious for, you know, seniority. You take a test. I mean, it's all locked in pretty good. So, on one hand, who would blame the employees? Who would blame somebody that you know, they can't? You've been here so long, you're eligible for a promotion. You'd take it. But at some point, they need to look at it and say, look, it's fine. You're eligible for a promotion, but right now we're top-heavy, so until somebody clears out, it's not there.
Well, I agree. And, of course, you know, they've got a generous retirement plan, too. And I haven't even done the research yet to find out how many firefighters are retired. But, you know, when you look at this, you're talking about spending $52 million. $52.2 million is the budget for the proposed budget for firefighters this year. And like I said, it's $800,000 less than last year. More power to you. But $52 million spent on 478 employees when clearly 150 of those shouldn't even be needed. 97 captains, 95 sergeants, and 20 majors for 208 firemen. And we wonder why everything is what I refer to as CFC, Clusterfuck Central, and the government. Thank you, George Carlin. I said that on the radio. But, you know, I mean, that is realistically the way it goes. So you've got 97 captains. Why do you need 97 captains? You've got a chief. You've got an assistant chief.
Well, one thing I'm unaware of, but just, I live out in the county, and we have our volunteer, our hybrid fire departments now. But how many firehouses is that? Does that cover?
Right.
At some point, how many captains do you have per firehouse? And, you know, it's like, are you having to build extra office space or something? It's like, where do you fit them all in? Because
you know, 97 captains. Yeah, 97 captains aren't sitting at the firehouse. 97 captains are not sitting at the firehouse. They're working a 40-hour week. They're taking their car home, and if there's a major fire, they might get called out when they're at home with their families. They're not sitting at the firehouse on call. That's just not realistic. Now, they're going to say they are. They're going to try to find some way to justify it, but it's not true.
The ratio of management to firefighters, it definitely seems out of whack. But like I say, the other thing is what's the ratio? How many officers per firehouse are there? And, how does that work? You know, what if you've got a firehouse that's got four captains? I mean, how does that work?
Well, there you go. Yeah. You've got, like I said, you've got 478 fire department employees, 208 firefighters, but there's 212 bosses. 208 firefighters, but 212 bosses when you throw in captains, sergeants, and majors. There's 212 of them total. Now, if you put those numbers together, that's a total of 420 people, and you've still got 58 other people that are employees of the fire department. I'm assuming those are secretaries, you know, people who send the calls out or start the runs or whatever, you know, office management people. The chief, the assistant chief, you know, that's part of running the business, but I bet we can find ways to cut back there too. But to sit here and tell me you need 212 bosses for 208 employees is the most asinine thing I think I've ever seen. And they just, you know, and this is interesting because this story came out of the Courier-Journal, which typically wouldn't put out that much information to give you a chance to go against them, and now we do. There's about 115 personnel per shift, you know. So if you break that down, I mean, let's really look at this. 115 personnel per shift, you know. There's 208 firefighters, so per shift. Let's break the firefighters down. Let's just say they both run 12-hour days. We know that ain't the way it works, but for the sake of argument, let's just say your shift is 12 hours and you're running two shifts. You've got 104 firefighters on each shift, which means there are only 11 other personnel per shift, with the exception of take the office out. So out of this 212 captains, majors, and sergeants combined, only 11 are actually on shift that day. So where are the others? They're in an office, they're playing politics, they're doing something, but they're not fighting fires. And until we get that priority straight, you know, and say, okay, let's redirect our resources to where we're actually doing something for public safety, not fluffing the daggone pocketbook so that we can sit here and have all this plausible deniability, which is exactly what it is. You got 97 captains blaming 95 sergeants, and you got 20 majors that are blaming 97 captains. That's all this is. It's a round robin circle jerk. But I saw that, and I was very, very angry about that. So, you know, we had to do that. We had to go there. We've got another story, Ed. Walmart. Have you been paying attention to that now?
Oh, yeah. The Lincoln Lot Walmart. West End Walmart.
Well, Well, it's fascinating. Friday night, Louisville Metro planning and design officials were supposed to speak to residents at a forum on the new Walmart proposal. And they were supposed to speak at West Chestnut Street Baptist Church. But apparently they backed out at the last minute. Now, what makes this story interesting in the Courier Journal is the Courier Journal always goes to people who have no credibility, who's going to slant the liberal line and give them all the time they want in the newspaper. Well, Jerome Sutton of the African American I'm Going to Drain Your Money Dry Tank is the one who organized the event. Jerome Sutton is a nobody with no credibility whatsoever, folks. But he's got some people convinced that he knows what he's doing, and all he's really doing is lining his pockets. That's my opinion, but I can give you stories that are public that will back that opinion up. But he says that he's upset the city of Louisville had the unmitigated gall to back out of that at the last minute. And I probably agree with that. If you've committed to a meeting, you organize this meeting, you get the neighborhood involved, you know, yeah, I can agree with that. I'd be pretty upset, too. However, what was really interesting here wasn't the fact that Jerome Sutton is upset, because I could care less. But what's really interesting here is you have some of these people that are out there screaming and hollering that are angry because Walmart is coming, and they won't let it go. Jerome Sutton put together a very liberal panel to talk about all of this stuff. So they went ahead and talked about it themselves. The panel went ahead and took questions from the residents during the forum. And every panelist opposed Walmart. Every panelist opposed Walmart. That is not a legitimate panel to me. You stacked the deck, and what's really interesting is you got somebody named Mark Fox, who's an architect, was at the meeting, and he doesn't like Walmart and goes on record. This architect, Mark Fox, I wouldn't hire him to design a dog cage, goes on and says you can pull it to the front and put doors and windows on it, but it's still going to be a turd. Now, we're talking about a neighborhood who is desperate for jobs. They've been left behind. Nobody wants to come there. You've got an employer, and I am certainly no fan of Walmart, who is willing to come there and give a couple of hundred jobs to the neighborhood. And then you got people like this out there doing everything they can to continue to keep them from coming. And then, of course, we had a resident who wouldn't go with his name, apparently, but he says, we have to drive 10 miles to get to a Walmart. Who cares about 400 feet, which is what they're trying to make Walmart do to give them some green space? Go ahead.
Yeah, well, you know, as always, it drives me nuts when people, you know, you look at the situation for what it is. Right now, it's a vacant lot with piles of rubble, piles of dirt, and some very, very sturdy weeds. You know, there's no tax revenue, and they're talking about, you know, and everybody gets fixated on the jobs. I actually would love to know who that neighbor was, because they have the right idea. You know, the jobs, yeah. Is Walmart the greatest place to work, biggest pay? Probably not. Is there opportunity for advancement? Sure there is. Is there value for the neighborhood where people don't have to get on a bus and drive and ride out somewhere and pack their groceries on a bus, you know, and have their ice cream melt before they get home because it's in the neighborhood? There's huge value in that. You know, fresh fruit, vehicle maintenance, what the hell, cheap plastic swimming pools that you can buy right around the corner from your house. You know, and people don't look at that. So I applaud that neighbor for saying that. It's like, thank you. It's not just about jobs. It's about making things more available to people. You know, you talk to me, I got Walmart nearby, I go there all the time. Am I thrilled with the place? No, but the fact is, if you need just about anything, as long as it's not real sophisticated hardware, it's there. So I just, these people, they want to come in and trash it. Walmart has thicker skin than I do because of some, and they got a lot more money, so it's just spitting in the ocean for them. But if this were my money, I'd probably react not unlike I did when it came to moving my business. I would look downtown, basically got cold shoulder and told mostly what I can't do on a given lot. I just said, you know what? Later. If I were Walmart, and like I say, these people could thank God I'm not, I'd look at it and say, all right, so you really, really, really don't want me down there. Okay, piss off.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. The fact that Walmart...
You're making money hand over fist. Hey, enjoy your weeds and old broken concrete warehouse floors. Enjoy them. They're yours. You get to keep them, champ.
Well, I agree with you. And, you know, the fascinating thing is Walmart is actually sticking in the game. And, of course, Walmart is looking at this as they know they're going to make money at it, or they wouldn't care. But, you know, they're sticking in the game. And as much as I can't stand Walmart and the way that they do business and basically the corporate welfare that supports Walmart, you know, our tax dollars and everything else with all the stuff we have to pick up from their garbage, at the same time, this is going to help the poorest among us. This is going to give people something, you know, to make their lives easier. To make their lives easier. And in this particular case, it's not costing, you know, you and me. It's Walmart. Well, it is. I mean, we're giving subsidies, but we're giving those subsidies to everybody. I just don't understand why the residents would try to deny themselves something that's going to be beneficial to them.
Subsidies, I've always asked the same question. I'm not trying to defend Walmart, but I've always asked the same question. Like, oh, these, you know, their employees have welfare. It's like, okay, yeah. But what did their employees have before they came to Walmart and worked for Walmart? I mean, yeah, is somebody on food stamps? Yeah, maybe. What were they on before they got to Walmart? Were they on food stamps, Section 8 housing, and whatever else? You know, were they full? And they talk about food stamps. It's like, okay, how many of them are on food stamps? Because we've all been to Walmart. How many of them are on food stamps? Maybe because they're old and they don't have any money and their Social Security doesn't give them enough so they can qualify for food stamps.
No, it's because they're poorer, blacker, and older.
Yeah,
it's because they're poor, black, or
older.
That's Jerry Abramson. Yeah.
We've never gotten satisfaction on that question. It's like, yes, a lot of people that work at Walmart are on some sort of assistance. Were they on more assistance or less or no assistance when they came to work for Walmart? Or is their employment at Walmart reduced the level of assistance they were getting beforehand? Never. Mm-hmm. It's just a question put out there. Maybe somebody listening can answer. But, you know, the only thing about the Walmart where I would take the side of the liberals is, you know what, Walmart does have gazillions of dollars, and they're going to put up a suburban box store. And I've seen some of the suggestions, the artists ready. I do wish they would come up with something a little, you know, because it is going to be in the middle of a neighborhood. I do wish they came up with something a little more attractive. I mean, it can't cost them that much more money. So, you know, set up your shop, but do some beautification. And somebody did have a good argument the other night. They said, you know, one of the reasons they're locating here is because a lot of people that don't have cars and don't drive, and, you know, they're going to ride the bus to the store. They're going to, you know, a taxi or going to walk to the store. Do they need 400 feet set back for parking lot? I don't think they do, you know, just based on the demographics of what they're selling. So on those two points, I'm kind of with the liberals. But beyond that, yeah, it's just like these people, you know, argue those two points, make it a point of beautification, you know, a pretty classy looking building, and it can only add to the equity of everything. So, but beyond that, yeah. These people that are popping up and turning there, it's just like, God, they're only looking at it from one dimension. Just forget it, that does. And they're only looking at it because through rose-colored glasses, but they're only looking at it through this filter. Start off in Walmart. Now, let's find all the things that we can hate about Walmart more.
Like, well, I'll tell you. Well, Jerome Sutton is sitting there saying he's upset the city of Louisville had the unmitigated gall to back out of that at the last minute on Friday night. Chris Pointer, Jerry Abramson's best friend, current spokesman for Mayor Greg Fisher, went and said that one of the reasons they didn't send any of the planning staff was because the case is still pending before the planning department, so it would be inappropriate for them to make a comment outside of that. So what that basically tells me is that the city didn't commit anyway. Jerome Sutton is sitting out there trying to make noise over nothing, and it kind of fits. The three people that they named to this panel, well, of course, was attorney Steve Porter. Everybody knows about Steve Porter. Martina Konecki, the group Neighborhood Planning and Preservation, and then former city planner Cass Herron, and Russell Neighborhood Association President Haven Harrington. All of these are known to be preservationists. All of these people are known to be ultra-liberal in this regard. So, you know, they didn't even try to make anything happen. So I don't know if the city even committed to that. I'm going to reach out to Pointer and see if I can get an answer to that question. But, you know, one of the big things here is, though, at the end of the day, I don't really care. the designs for this store are no, you know, it's not like this store is going to be any different than any store in any other neighborhood. There are Walmarts in every neighborhood across this city. And now they're trying to put one in a neighborhood that doesn't have anything, and they want to fight it. Who really cares about, you know, making the city better? The people like these ultra-liberals who fight it, or the people who say, give us something, like the one resident was quoted in this article? I don't know. I do know this, Ed. We are out of time. Final thoughts, my friend.
I was going to say, I know a few of those.
Well, we do.
I think, yeah.
You're breaking up.
Well, I don't know why, but
there you are.
But just foul thoughts. You know, they always talk about. I mean, they never short each other. But the arrogance of the politicians, and the fact that people don't make an answer to them. You know, this Dan Johnson thing. Dan's a goober. This whole Brian Matthews kind of sloppy, kind of underhanded, you know, it's kind of scheming. And Gallows looks to it. But the fact that he's able to get away with it, at least up to this point, you know, that's what we always rail against. It's like, guys, we've said it before, and we're not saying it to be smart, Alex, although, you know, sometimes. But these politicians, they work for you. And secondly, they're not that much, in many cases, they're not as good as you. You've got to make them answer. You got to get cynical. You got to look at them and say, you know, no, you don't talk to me that way. No, you will answer my questions. And by the way, you work for me. And I'm glad to hear that these smart people are living. Because, good. They're going right at him, and I don't care whether you're liberal or conservative, and whether you're locking horns with a liberal or a conservative politician. People, don't take this crap off of them. They're not that smart. They're self-important, but they're nothing. They're us. They work for us. We need to cop that attitude. It's like, dude, you don't talk to me like that. You work for me. You know, and the funny thing is like my councilman, Jerry Miller, is a very, very smart guy. He's a very humble guy. So people, if you're in the Beachmont neighborhood, hell, if you're not, go have a little fun with Dan. and don't take crap from him. You know, and I tell you what, if you know you're gonna get after him, hey, call up the local media, call up the Courier. You know, they might show, they might not. But I guarantee you the DRBs and the 32s, if they think that the constituents of a given area are going to launch on a councilman and it's going to get dicey, they'll be there. Believe it. So, you know, get charged. And,
well, I tell you, I would love to sit here and say that I'm amazed anymore, but I never am. And that really, truly is sad to me, as it should be sad to anybody who is like that now. We have gotten to a point in this city, in this state, and in this country where nothing shocks us. We don't become upset and livid anymore. We expect this kind of behavior every single day that we're getting from the likes of Dan Johnson and Brian Matthews. There have been rumors for years that Dan Johnson has a drinking problem, or Dan Johnson has a pill problem, or Dan Johnson has a gambling problem. And if we could sit here, and if Dan Johnson would say he has any of those problems, and that has affected the way that he talks, leads, and approaches the people and seeks help, we could forgive that. But unfortunately, whether the rumors are true or not, Dan Johnson is doing nothing more than proving the liberal Democratic mafia establishment motto. Why do we do what we do? Because we can get over it. And that's what we have come to accept in this city. Then we look at things like Walmart. Walmart, whether you like the company or not at this stage is irrelevant. Walmart's going to build. They're going to make money building new stores. That's what they do. And to sit here and tell the people in your neighborhood, we don't care about you because we want to be able to tell everybody how to run their business. We want to tell them where they can hire from, who they can hire from. We want to tell them how much to pay. And now we want to tell them exactly what kind of a store they're allowed to build. Come on. That is the ultra-liberal, arrogant attitude that we have been taught from the ultra-liberal, democratic style of doing government business here. And that is the biggest concern. And I tell you, folks, until you wake up and you get involved and realize that that way of life and that mindset is what is destroying your future, and look around you at the neighbors and the children and destroying their future, until you're willing to stand up and recognize that and take responsibility for your own failures, then you're going to continue getting this. People will give you what you're willing to accept. The leadership in this town clearly thinks that we are willing to accept anything that they want to do, and we will accept it with open arms and continue giving them the power to screw us. Dan Joshua just made a major mistake with Brian Matthews. This is not going to go away. This is going to get a lot worse. I can promise you that. Philip Bailey, thank you for bringing this attention to our light, to bringing the sunshine, the transparency that we needed here. Now, Ed Springs is going to do what Ed Springs does best. And he's going to take the bull by the horns, and he's going to lead the fight against this, among other things. But the reality is, it's time to get involved. And these are the reasons why. You know, tomorrow night, Dale will be here. And Wednesday night when I get back, we're going to get into some other things you folks are going to find interesting. We've got a top 10 list of the most corrupt states done by Indiana University as part of the research done here. So it's a local thing for us. But Kentucky is number 9, 9th out of the top 10 most corrupt states. I can't imagine where Louisville would rank if they went down to the city level. And maybe they're working on that. But we're going to get into that story. We're going to get into this so-called budget crisis that we had, where we were going to be $28 million short on the budget. But lo and behold, miracle of all miracles, somehow our budget is going to be balanced according to Steve Beshear. We're going to tell you why. And they knew it in advance. The crap that they continue lying to us about is ungodly. And maybe we'll be able to get into this Lois Lerner mess and all of the emails that mysteriously disappeared, and how we can really still get that information. But that's it for tonight, folks. That's what's coming up on Wednesday. Don't forget to tune in tomorrow night with our Tuesday Night Truth TNT show with Dale the Truth Gillespie. Mr. Martin, we'll see you, man. Have a great night. It is gone again. I don't know what's going on with that. That's it, folks. We'll talk to you later. Have a great night. Thank you so much for listening. Take care.